for advice that we're not we're going to make any fancy introductions here. I just want to thank her by calling. Take some time for this extremely difficult to CRC to educate us about all sorts of questions again that we spoke about that you're waiting for.
Okay.
Eager, ready to press.
Okay, nice to see everybody here. We're going to talk about Chol V'Shol, as you know, this morning. I'm going to have things that I want to say, but you should feel free to stick in your comments along the way. It's much more interesting if people talk back than if I talk to myself. I don't know if you've ever told you that. Does he? That they shouldn't say it? They shouldn't talk? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So usually that's what I would say that you should talk back.
Do it wrong once.
No, but if your Rebbe said you shouldn't talk, then you wait till the end. That's usually good. I'll tell you, we recently had just to respond to you, Rebbe. We recently had someone who was teaching mashgichim. Go over them halachas they need to know for Shabbos. If they're the mashgiach and an event on Shabbos, think about Hilchos Shabbos. So they said, what should we do if we come? They asked a question. What should we do if we come to a shul, and the CRC said we can do this and this and this, but the rav in the shul says you're not allowed to do that. The rav says, in my shul we don't do it like that. We don't use this thing. We're not. So we said, if the rav in the shul says that you should do that, follow what the rav says. That's what you should do. So if I reply, they said no questions. Then no questions. Okay. There's a one. There's something called a mammal, and the term. The term mammal, one of the criteria to be a mammal is that that animal has mammary glands, which is it produces milk to feed its own young. That's what identifies something as a mammal. So we're mammals, and so are kosher animals, like cows and sheep and yaks. Those are kosher animals, and they produce milk to give their children, to feed their infant, the babies. But so do other mammals, like horses and pigs. Camels, they also produce milk to feed their young. Now, most people, the milk that they drink is cow's milk, but Chazal were concerned that somebody might mix in non-kosher milk, usually we think about it as pig's milk, into the regular milk. So the Chazal said that if you can only drink milk, if a yid is standing by there to watch, that in fact what's going into your bottle is cow's milk. Okay? They really, midraisa, you could have been probably assume that it's cow's milk, but the Rabbanan Chacham said a yid has to stand there and watch make sure that it's cow's milk. Okay, now, we know that most Jews in America, for sure, probably in the whole world, most Jews don't eat what we just called Chol V'Shol. They don't have milk that a Jew is watching when they milk the cows and long until it gets into your bottle. So we're going to try to explain what's the reason for that. Why do most people ignore Gemara and Din Shulchan Aruch? No one argues on this. Then it's very straightforward. Everyone knows that. That's what you have to have. You have to have milk that a Jew watch the milk. And while we talk about it, we're going to talk about some sort of side issues that relate to Chol V'Shol as well. Okay, let's start with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, if you go to a farm and that farmer only has cows, okay, you walk out. That's all there is. For as far as you can see, there's hundreds. There's only cows, no other animals. Even so, you mechuyev to have a yid watch the milking. I mean, even though to everyone can see that there's just cows here, you would think, no, from this farmer I should be assumed that everything's okay and it's for sure cow's milk. You still have to have a yid watching. The dinim are a little bit more cow. You could be a little bit, you don't have to be as particular how you watch them, but basically you still need Chol V'Shol. But there are two ways to understand that din, what the Shulchan Aruch said. Did any of you ever hear of a din called Basar Shinas Alman Ayin? Well, Basar Shinas Alman Ayin means that if a yid wasn't watching meat, we're concerned that someone might have switched it. If you have meat in your house, no one can switch it. If you leave your house and there's someone, a guy in your house by themselves, then you have to be concerned maybe they would take the kosher meat and switch it for treif meat. Or if you get a delivery, from a pizza shop or from a restaurant, they send you a sandwich, maybe the delivery person, who's not Jewish, switched. He took out the corned beef sandwich coming from the restaurant and instead put in a treif corned beef sandwich because the kosher meat is considered better. So the din by Basar Shinas Alman Ayin is that we only are concerned that the guy switched the food if he has some logical reason to do so. Maybe the kosher meat is better or the kosher meat is more expensive, so he would have a reason to switch one for the other. But if there's no reason for him to switch it, just to get meat, he wouldn't do it. If he has nothing to gain by switching the meat, we're not conscious that he would do it. And in that case, it doesn't have to seal it or watch it or like that. So the Pri Chodesh says The same thing applies to Chol V'Shol. Like Chol V'Shol, we don't have to be worried that the guy putting pig's milk into your regular milk, only if he has some logical reason to do that. If there's no reason for him to do that, for example, let's say there's no pigs, there's no pig's milk available. Okay, right now, if a farmer out in Wisconsin wanted to add pig's milk into your cow's milk, he couldn't find it. There is no such thing as pig's milk. There aren't even milking machines for pigs. No one goes over and milks cows by squeezing them. There's no machines for milking pigs. You can't even get pig's milk. And if you could, it would be way more expensive than the cow's milk. So the pre-cholder says, if there's no concern that the guy, there's no financial reason or no any advantage why the guy would want to mix another milk, you don't have to have a yid watching. The Gemara, it's just like Buster Shira Salman Ayin. You have to do it in the case when you think he might switch it. Here, there isn't any possibility or logic to a person switching it. You don't have to be chashish. That's what the Pichadish says. Now, that's one way of understanding it. But you know, there are other gzeiros. Did anybody here ever hear of Gvinas Yisrael? Gvinas Akum. Yeah, what's the din of Gvinas Akum? The din of Gvinas Akum is, the way you make cheese is, you take milk, you put something into it, something called rennet, and when you put that in, it makes the milk solidify and harden into what we call cheese, and leaving some other stuff behind. So now, the easiest way to do that is, you take a cow's stomach, this rennet grows inside of a cow's stomach, and you throw it in. So Chazal were concerned that a guy would use rennet from a treif animal. So they said, when you make cheese, a yid has to be there to watch it or put the rennet in. Whatever he has to do, he has to do something in the making of the cheese. And that's called Gvinas Yisrael. Cheese that we eat has to be Gvinas Yisrael. That gzera applies even if there's no chashash that the guy will do it. For example, nowadays in America, almost all cheese uses rennet that's kosher. There's not really such a chashash that someone will use treif rennet. Even so, even though it's not logical, there's no reason why he would use the treif rennet, even so, once Chazal made a gzera, they said you're not allowed to eat Gvinas Akum, you have to eat Gvinas Yisrael, then the gzera applies even if the reason doesn't apply. So in some gzeras, like Gvinas Akum, we say, it has to be Gvinas Yisrael, even if there's no reason why the guy would switch. You have no reason to be chayshish. So the Chasam Sofer says, Chol Yisrael is the same kind of gzera. Even if there's no chashash that the guy will switch it, there's no reason in the world to think he would stick in pig's milk. He doesn't even have any pig's milk. The Chachamim said it's not kosher unless the yid stands there to watch the milk. That's how the Chasam Sofer learns. Okay, so we have a machlokes. The Pre-Chadosh, the famous Pre-Chadosh says that if you only have to eat Chol V'Yisrael when there's a real concern that the guy might switch in or put in the treif, and the Chasam Sofer says no, you need Chol V'Yisrael. It doesn't make a difference even if there's no concern that a guy would switch in. Okay, now as you can well imagine there's
I want to insult us, I'm sorry.
Okay. If anybody wants, if you're finished, you can keep my notes if you want afterwards. That'll help you. Okay. As you can well imagine, there's many places can talk about this machlokes. What's important, I want to note to you is that the Chazon Ish says that the din is like the Pre-Chodesh. Okay, the Chazon Ish, from the Gedolei HaDor, the Gadol HaDor from a generation or two ago, says that the din is like the Pre-Chodesh.
So the Chazon Ish... Are you going to leave right
now? So... why?
The Chazon Ish says like the Pre-Chodesh.
The Chazon Ish says like the Pre-Chodesh, right. So one reason why people eat Chol Stam is because why people eat are not mocked with that Chol V'Yisrael. Okay, I didn't use that word Chol Stam yet. The reason why people don't eat Chol V'Yisrael is because the Chazon Ish said the din is like the Pre-Chodesh. If there's no reason to be chayshish that the guy mixed in milk from another thing, you don't have to. That's it. You don't have to be chayshish. That's what Chazon Ish says. Okay. Now, there are those who say the Chazon Ish didn't mean it. If there are those who wrote, they didn't mean it. But in the printed sefer, it says the din is like the Pre-Chodesh. That's what we're going to follow that. Okay, that's one reason. Okay. Now, there's a second reason to think that why people would not eat Chol V'Yisrael. And that is, this, you probably have heard of this, Rav Moshe has famous tshuvas, a whole number of tshuvas about it, where he says the following. We think that the Gemara says that a yid has to watch the milking. Why does a yid have to watch the milking? Because we need to be sure, we need a certain level of sure that this stuff is only cow's milk. Rav Moshe says, you don't. There are other ways to know something for sure other than just having a kosher witness walk in and tell us that it happened. There are other ways to know that other than having an aid walk in. Rav Moshe says there's another thing we call an anan sahadi. There are other ways to know things that even a bezdin would be convinced of something even without an aid walking in to tell us that that happened. So Rav Moshe says that nowadays there's government oversight. Government watches to make sure that they only put cow's milk into the bottle. And therefore, that, and they find people who don't follow their rules, so though that oversight makes it that we have an anansadi, we can be sure that this is only cow's milk. We don't have the traditional aid of a Jew standing there watching them put in the cow's milk. We have another way of proving it, and that's equally good to prove that this is cow's milk.
And this will obviously only apply if you have such a government like the United States of America.
We're getting there. We're heading that way. Yes, we're heading that way. So that's how much it says that it's we need a certain type of, there's government oversight, and that oversight lets us be sure that this is milk. Sure enough, it's as if a Jew was standing there. Now, of course, this is a chiddush. The din, until 50 years ago, no one ever dreamt of that. Everyone, the din says that Yid has to watch it. Everyone understood that that's what you have to do. So Ramesh himself says, you should know, if a person has Chol V'Shol available, the traditional Chol V'Shol, of course that's what he should eat. Of course you should be doing that. What I'm telling you is a chiddush that you should have this. And Ramesh is even another famous tshuva, a well-known tshuva, which is, a yeshiva called up Ramesh, wrote to Ramesh and said, you know, we have yeshivas, all yeshivas are tight on money, and we would like to give the boys Chol V'Shol, I think it's boys Chol V'Shol, but it's a lot cheaper to buy them than not Chol V'Shol. And you're telling us that it's mutter, the stuff with government oversight is considered Chol V'Shol, so should we buy that also? Is that okay? We'll save money. It's, you know, Kehila Shigel, it's not our money to spend. And Ramesh says, no, it's Kedai to spend the yeshiva's money on it. This is a worthwhile thing to spend money on, even though the yeshiva's tight and maybe you could think of other things to do with it. Ramesh says, I hold that it's mutter. He wrote a number of tshuvas that it's mutter. If a person has a chance to eat it, then he should. And the tshuva is really written, he tells you, he's really writing it for people who are stuck. People who live in places where it's not available or whatever, some special reason why they can't. Okay, so, now, there's a little bit, something's changed since Ramesh wrote the tshuva. In this case, it's for the better, actually, which was, one of Ramesh's tshuvas says like this. The people said to Ramesh, you're telling us that the government watches it, but at least in his day, or how they told him, said the government doesn't go to the farms. So if no inspectors ever go into the farms, then by the time the government inspectors show up, which is in the dairy where they actually put it into the bottles, by the time they get there, the milk is ready to trade. Because until now, the milk's just been floated and who knows what they stuck into it. And there isn't even any oversight in the farms. So Ramesh says another chiddush to answer that question. There's a special, then I'm just going to say briefly, that the Ramosha holds that Chol V'Shol is only usher when it's Higi Eliyad Yisrael. It's not usher when it comes out of the cow. It's only usher when the Jew gets to it. As long as by then a Jew is watching, that's good enough. Okay? I'm not explaining that very well. There's obviously not everybody agrees to that. So Ramosha, that was Ramosha's sort of a second chiddush to make it mutter. For now things have changed so much that now government inspectors actually do go to the farms. And governments, one of the things that's on their checklist to look out for is whether there are other animals on the farm, not cows. And the inspectors say that if they ever saw something else on the farm, they would immediately report the person as being, not following regulations or codes or whatever he's supposed to do. Okay. So, now we've heard two reasons why people would not eat what we call Chol V'Shol. And we can now break people up into three groups. Okay. And for any of you, I see a number of you here who live in West Orange Park, we'll break up like this. The people who daven at Brisk, okay, Tamid the Ravan Salvation, they say, Ramosha said it's mutter, the Chazir said it's mutter, I don't know which one they hold, like, you could eat things that are not Chol V'Shol, and it's mutter, no problem. That's one group, and that's probably the bulk of Frum Yidden eat Chol V'Shol. That's one thing, okay? A few blocks over to the Lake Mikkel, okay, walk over a few blocks to California, there, they'll tell you, the din is, it's probably mutter. Mikra din is probably mutter to eat chol v'shol, to eat what we don't call chol v'shol. But there's enough reasons to be machmir about this, that we will be machmir and only eat chol. We will only eat what we call chol v'sol. Okay? Those people might say, we're machmir to only eat chol v'sol, but for example, if something was made on the not chol v'sol kelim, that's okay. We won't be machmir on the kelim of it. We might kasher, there are differences in how you kasher if the kosher food or if the tray food. So they might take those clues about how we kasher with kli, because really deep down they hold that the ikra thing is that it's mutter, but the ikra thing might be that it's mutter, but we personally want to be machmer in it, so we're only machmer, so to speak, so far. We're thinking, this really comes from Rafenkin, such a sheep. And the third group is, in between those two places, is Rabbi Unger's shul, okay, in between, and this mostly associated with the Chassidish, who say, no, they don't agree with all these clues. Chol v'sol has to be the way it says in Shulchan Aruch, the way it says in the Gemara. Chol v'sol has to be, a yid has to see it and watch it. It's not mutter, it's completely usher. If it wasn't made like that, it's treif, and the food is treif midrabanan, and that food is not, you're not allowed to eat it. We're not doing it as a chomer, we're doing it because that's what it says. Open up a Gemara, and the Gemara says the yid has to watch it. If there's no yid watching it, the food is treif, we don't eat it. No, we don't know from chachmas and all kinds of shittas. Okay? So, in order to help people sort of know where they're going, they coined a new term, okay, which is a term called chol stam, okay, and that is to say, there's chol v'sol is used to refer to the traditional way of making chol v'sol, that a Jew stood there and watched the milking, all the way through till it got into your bottle, and chol stam is used to refer to when no one did special watching it, but some people hold that it's mutter for one of these two reasons, either like the prichodesh, or like what Rav Moshe said. And that's what you see for the Chol of Stam. People won't call it Chol of Akum. Okay? People won't call it Chol of Akum unless it, like, mamash came from, you know, a farmer in Cambodia where there's no reason to be mako, then they'll call it merely Chol of Akum. But we use, like, Chol of Stam is like the in-between term to say this is the kind of milk that isn't the traditional Chol of Yisrael, but some people think that it's kosher. Okay, that's what it's like. Okay. I'm going to stick in one little thing. There are some variations in how people do this. There are, for example, some people who eat only chol v'sol, but they'll eat chol stam milk powder. Okay, that's based on a har tzvi. I'm saying there are little variations, but these three groups that I gave you is the three main groups we have. We have people who eat chol, what we call chol stam, no matter what. There are people who only eat chol v'sol, and they hold that the chol stam is treif. And then there's the in-between, people who say that minadina might be mutter, but we're going to be machmer and only eat chol v'sol. Okay, now. So remember, we have two reasons to possibly make. Now we have to hear there's a nafkamina between these two reasons. Okay? And these nafkaminas, the nafkamina comes out as follows. What Rabbi Plotnik mentioned about different countries. Okay? Anybody here ever, I don't know if you have a map here, ever hear of Tibet? Everybody here of Tibet? You don't need to talk about it.
Go back up.
Okay. Did anybody, it's okay. Did anybody ever hear of Tibet? Okay, you know where Tibet is? It's near China. It's in Asia, okay. Tibet is on what's called the roof of the world. Okay, it's on a plateau, a big flat piece of land that's about 16,000 feet above sea level. Okay, now 16,000 feet above sea level is not great conditions for most animals or even people to survive at. Okay, you know, when people climb Mount Everest, which is there in the Himalayas, they have to condition themselves to living up there. It's hard to breathe up there. You have to be only certain people and animals can handle that climate up there. The kind of animal that the most common animal that they use up there in the Himalayas, up in Tibet, is called a yak. Okay? Yaks are kosher. It's sort of like a cow. Yaks are kosher. And that's what they use. And they raise them, they plow for them, they do all the things that people use animals for. And one of the things they do is they make milk from yaks. Okay? Now, let's think of our two reasons we have to be mako. Okay? Yak, in the Himalayas, there are probably, just like in America, the only milk that's around is yak milk. So what the Prichoder says, is there anything available of treif milk around? It's probably not available other milks. It probably would be more expensive, but it isn't around. Yak milk is what's around. The Prichoder should probably make it. But what about what Ramesha said? Ramesha said it's mutter because we have an Anan Sahadi. We can be sure that they're putting in only yak milk because there's government oversight. Now, we know that in China, when they want to enforce laws, they could be very tough. You know, the guy does something that embarrasses them or breaks laws that they hold very strict with, by the end of the week, his head will be off. Okay, he's gone. They take care of it. They can be very strict. But we also know that they can look the other way and not enforce laws. There might be laws on the books that they could not look at. You know, also, there's political questions. You know, the Chinese relationship with the Tibet government is very, you know, back and forth. So are there laws being enforced? Is there anybody who watches to who can give us an anansahadi that the milk going into those bottles is real yak milk? Now, we don't get yak milk, like bottles of yak milk, I don't believe, to America. But we get other dairy products. Casein comes from Tibet. Okay, so one, so we have to decide whether that's mutter. According to Prichadish, it's probably mutter. According to Ramesh, Ramesh wants to say, even according to Chasam Sofer, it should be mutter. You have to know. You have to know more. You have to be very in touch with what's going on in Tibet to decide if that's mutter. Okay, let's go to an opposite case. Okay, in Africa. Okay? In Africa, there are probably more camels than there are cows. Right? Cows don't handle the deserty, boiling hot kind of climate the way camels do. Okay? Not only that, the UN and other people who try to help out the Africans are much more poorer and undernourished, much more than other continents. So they try to help them. One of the ways to help them is to teach them how to take camel milk and preserve it. You can't make cheese out of camel milk because chafe milk doesn't turn into cheese, but you can make yogurt out of it, and there are other ways to preserve it. So people have been trying to encourage them and teach them how to collect this milk and make something out of it because it's a good, healthy food for them to eat. Okay, so with the pre-Chadash's reason, not going to apply to African milk. In Africa, there's trade milk all over the place. The camel milk is every place. So you can't say over there that it's cheaper to use kosher milk or it's easy to use kosher milk. No, just the opposite. The camel milk is what's all over the place. The camel milk is easily available. Okay, now, Ramosha's reason, Ramosha says there's government oversight. I don't know much about Africa, but we get the feeling of it being very lawless and people just do whatever they want. So there isn't this think of oversight of policemen in the street and, law and order. You don't think of it that way. I guess you have to know the countries. So Ramosha's reason might not apply either. We don't even know if there are laws that say that something sold as cow's milk in Tanzania has to be cow's milk. We don't really know. I mean, it's hard to imagine. So chances are that stuff would have none of the coolest. Okay, good for us is that I don't think that Africa exports any milk or dairy products, so we're safe from that stuff. Okay, let's take a third case. Russia and South America. In those countries, we can guess that the pre-Chadash's reason applies. Chances are that what they're milking is mainly cows, and there isn't other things available. Although, some of these people are pretty desperate. Some of these people are poor or more backward or more desperate, and you'd have to know whether they're milking other things. We can't say that for sure. We could talk about Wisconsin and even Ireland. We could think about how they do. That sort of relate to them. We don't know whether these people, whether pre-Chadash's reason applies. Maybe yes and maybe not. As far as government oversight, you really have to know the country to know whether there is or isn't government oversight in each one of these places. It's not a rule, so it has to be very in touch with it. Okay, so now, in all these examples that I gave you, you might think that I'm giving you these far-fetched examples. It's not true. The way commerce works nowadays is that the casein that's in your food could just as well come from Tibet as it could from Wisconsin.
What foods have casein in them?
They're all over the place. Casein's all over the place. That's a protein. I don't know what it does. I have no clue what it does. I don't remember. So it's there. It's in all kinds of foods. Okay. Casein is actually an interesting food that legally casein, this may sound funny to you, but by American law, casein is not dairy. Okay. And even though casein comes from milk, the protein comes from milk. It's for sure milk. But by law, it's not dairy. And the reason for that law, the reason for that law is because the dairy farmers were concerned that people would put casein in from other countries and they would hurt their business. So since they convinced the government to make the law that you can't call casein dairy, that way if you want to say it's a dairy product, it has to have real milk in it. If you want to put casein in it, then it doesn't count. Okay, so this is a political decision that casein is not milk. Okay? So go understand. That's a political decision that casein is not milk. It comes from cows. It comes from milk.
And that's the second thing, dairy?
It would not, for allergy-wise, it might. That's actually a good question. It might say that. But it's not allowed to say that it's a dairy. It'll say it's a non-dairy creamer, even though it has casein in it, okay? Because it's not allowed to say it's a dairy creamer.
Anything from any other animal, which is kosher, any milk, is milk eggs or just...
From other animals?
Like goat milk is kosher.
Yes, it's milk eggs. Yes. All kosher, milk from all kosher animals is milk eggs. Okay, so we have to realize that you might think, Tibet, Russia, you think we're going to get acid casein from Russia? That's very likely. It's not far-fetched at all. You think about it. If it's really cheap, it's worth it to ship it over here. It could be cheaper than coming from Wisconsin. So these questions are questions that a hashgacha who's giving hashgacha on Chol of Stam has to think that through. If someone comes to the CRC and they want to use casein from this and this place, part of our decision has to be is, does that food, is it mutter without being Chol of Yisrael? So I'm not saying that you should now go and second guess your hashgacha. You say, I'm buying this thing with the chavke on it. Do they know what they're talking about? Did they make the right decision? Because they made 100 decisions about your food. There are all kinds of shilas that have to be decided. But you have to realize that if you're eating Chol of Yisrael, you're avoiding these kind of shilas. Because what we call Chol of Yisrael is done the traditional way. There's a yid standing there reading Tehillim while they're milking the cows. Okay, he's sitting there watching them milk the cows. So it's done the traditional. You don't have any problems like this. You don't have to think, are we sure that we're covering it? Because I have to tell you, some poskim who had heard, you know, that this and this hashgacha took milk from the following place because even without being Chol of Yisrael. And others, they're like, the mouths drop. Like, I can't believe it. You know, if you'd meet this guy in the street, you wouldn't trust him. I mean, you wouldn't believe that a guy from whatever country, that you could take his milk as Chol of Yisrael. So I'm not telling you should second guess the hashgacha. I'm telling you that if you're buying the food that's Chol of Yisrael, you may be on safer ground with some of these things, that they made a decision, and we assume that they made a, you know, thought out good decision, but you'll be on safer ground having the Chol of Yisrael, which doesn't have to think this question through. You're avoiding that child.
Have there been cases recently about farms, dairy farms in America that have been caught with anything other than cow's milk?
No, because dairy farms don't work like in the times of Gemara. A guy milked one little cow and he put it into a bottle. They're milking hundreds and thousands of cows. And you have to be set up to milk horses. You can't. There's no machinery. There isn't. There are
all different operations.
They're not set up for that. Right. So, you know, maybe in Africa, they either do it by hand or they're set up to milk camels. But in Wisconsin, there's no such thing. If you brought a horse into the state, into the milking place, they wouldn't know what to do with it. They're not built like that. You know, their equipment is not made for milking horses. They don't think about it. So it's really, I'm not saying it might happen on a little farm in somebody's backyard, but when you buy a bottle of milk, there isn't a chance in the world that it's anything but cow's milk. It's so easy and it's so set up to do it, they wouldn't, why would they get milk out of a cat? They wouldn't know what to do with it. It wouldn't work, you know. It wouldn't work commercially. Let me say, it wouldn't work commercially. It's not such a chashash. Okay. Now, in this vein of thinking about other shilas, I'm going to mention to you another shilas. When you eat, actually I'm going to use an example that just came up this morning, that was mentioned this morning. When you eat bread, it comes from wheat and wheat kernels. They're made from starches that people can eat and digest fine. But the wheat stalk is not made of starch, it's made of a different sugar called cellulose. Okay, called cellulose. That is not digestible by people. Okay, if you ate cellulose, you don't digest it at all. Actually, people take it as a laxative because it goes right through. Does it? You can't digest that stuff. But cows can. The way cows digest that stuff, in order for a cow to digest things like cellulose and basically that's what grass is, they have four stomachs. Okay, kosher animals who chew their cud. Chewing their cud, you have to have more than one stomach to chew your cud. You swallow it, goes into one stomach, comes back and you chew it again. That's why they're chewing it again and again. They have a couple of stomachs that has to pass through. Okay.
So the
cows have a number of stomachs. Okay, one of those stomachs, the fourth one, is called an abomasum. Okay, kacha, that's what it's called. But for some reason there's a problem that cows have, particularly after they have their first child, is that this fourth stomach, gets overfilled with gas. And it could be dangerous to the cow. Okay, not only is it uncomfortable, but it could be dangerous for the cow. Okay, so how does the farmer take care of this problem? So the simplest way to deal with the problem is the farmer sticks a long needle through the cow's skin in the right spot, I guess. He has to know what he's doing into the right spot, into this abomasum, and it's a hollow needle, and the gas just escapes through the needle, and the cow is happy and back to normal. Okay, it goes on with life. It's about 4% of cows have this problem. So the earlier place can talk about this. What's the shiloh? What's the shiloh for it? I mean, it's a strange operation, but what the shiloh is that if an animal has certain problems with it, we call it defects to it, it can become a trefa. Trefa means is an animal has something wrong with it. The most famous, it has a hole in its lung. That animal is not kosher. The Torah says you can't eat a behemoth that's a trefa. Trefa means it has one of these defects that could cause it to die. one, there are certain ones that are usher. If it has holes in certain places or certain things wrong, the animals are treifa. So the shaila is, does making a hole in this fourth stomach make the animal into a treifa? Okay? You're making just a tiny little hole, just a needle going in. Excuse me? Is the animal going to die when?
If it didn't have this?
If it didn't have the operation, it potentially will die. But the shaila is not about the gas that it has. The problem is that in solving that problem, they might
you
be
might
making
a trefa.
You might have made it a trefa. The gas in it wouldn't be a trefa. But the hole in it might make it into a trefa. So here comes the farmer to help the animal, and that might make the animal trefa. So that is to say, if 4% of the animals have this, then those animals might be trefas. Okay? There might be now trefa milk mixed in with kosher milk. Okay? So, earlier Paiskum talked about it when this was done in a more, could we say, crude way. But it comes up again. People, contemporary person have talked about it. And there's two reasons that I know of, there may be other reasons, why most hashkachas are, don't worry about this. Even if an animal had the surgery, they consider it to not be a treifa. One is as follows. The animal's abomasum, this stomach, has more than one layer to it. The stomach is made up of a number of layers. So they don't want to poke a hole straight through the stomach, because when they then pull the needle out, the animal will have a scar on all the layers in the same spot, and it might rip open. That scar might not heal right, and it would rip open, then the animal would really be in bad shape. So what they do is like this. I'll show you the piece of paper. Imagine these are the different layers. They poke it into through just the first layer. After they poked it through the first layer, they then move, pull the needle over a little bit, and poke it through the second layer. Then they pull the needle over a little this way, and poke it through the... Let's say there are three layers, through the third layer. So this way, they're getting all the way through into the inside, into the animal's stomach to let the gas out. But when they pull the needle out and the papers, the layers, line themselves back up, the holes are not next to each other.
Does it cause
pain to
the animal?
I think they give anesthesia before they do the surgery. And so the holes are not next to each other. This way, if one of the holes, the scars is not healing well, the animal is still going to be safe because the other layers are still covering up, and eventually it heals properly, you know, with the right care, it heals properly. So, Rebelsky is a person in New York, he said, that since the only time the animal is a treifa if there's a hole all the way through, here, there's never a hole all the way through. What there is there are holes in three different spots, and the only time there's actually a hole all the way through is for a few seconds while the needle's in, and that is not enough to make it a treifa. When they pull the needle out, it immediately is close up. There's never a hole all the way through. That makes the animal not a treifa. That's one reason that it shouldn't be treifa. A second reason. The Gemara says, if you have a hole on the inner stomach, that's what the Mishnah says, the Chulin, on the inner stomach, even if the hole is a tiny hole, it makes the animal treifa. But on other parts in that area, you need a bigger hole. Okay? There are seven shittas in the Gemara. What the Gemara means, what the Mishnah means when it says the inner stomach. What is it? Okay? According to six of those answers, our animal is not a problem. The stomach that we're talking about is not the one that needs a little hole. It needs a big hole to become a treifa. It would be fine. According to the last terrace of the Gemara, it's exactly our stomach that we're talking about, and that little hole makes it a treifa. Okay? Well, what's it in? Which stomach is it talking about? What is it talking about? So, some machlokes we're showing you how we pass it. Now, there's a rule. The Marshal says, if you have a machlokes, whether something is a treifa or it's not a treifa, and you see that that problem doesn't make the animal die. Remember I told you, a treifa means an animal that's going to die because it has some kind of a problem. But you see this animal doesn't die. Actually, in our case, the animal doesn't just die. It lives much better. Right? The surgery is helpful to the animal. The animal can give birth. That's another symptom that it's not a treifa. It gives birth afterwards. It's not a treifa. You can decide who to paskin like based on the fact that the animal lives. So these animals all live fine after the surgery. So that could be for us a raya that we don't paskin like that sheep in the Gemara. This is the way Rabbi Vadya Seif, Rav Shlomo Amar, the current chief rabbi, says that therefore the animal's not a treifa. Okay, I hope I didn't lose you guys in that judgment. But what's again to you is there are a number of reasons why that surgery might not be considered a treifa. Anybody who eats Chol of Sam is assuming, like we just said, that the animal is not a treifa when it has that surgery. But people who eat Chol of Yisrael don't have those kind of cows in their milk. And the reason is as follows. Nowadays, in a modern farm, every animal when it's born gets a tag and a computerized chip put into his ear, and a number, and they watch that animal from the day he's born until he dies. And they know everything about him, okay? I was in a farm, they could tell you how much milk it gave on every single day, how much milk that cow gave. And they watch it, the computer watches it. Because if the animal starts giving too little milk, then they know something's wrong with it and they have to treat it. Well, everything that goes on with this animal is a computerized record. This is the funniest, little story is that we were looking through these records in a company, and they said, this and this animal is in barn number one. And then we looked more in the records, and said the animal died in February. So we said, guys, if he died in February, you didn't leave him in the barn, did you? He didn't leave him in the barn, so they had a very big tumult. They couldn't figure out why the computer said he was in barn number one, yet he was dead. He's been dead for months. They didn't bury him there, you know? It wasn't a Mae Smith, so they just buried him right there. Anyway, that was a whole tumult in the farm to figure out what happened. How could the computer say that he was in barn number one when he's dead? But the computer knows everything about this animal. So if you want to know which animals had the surgery, it's easy to find it out. In any modern farm, in a second, you can pull out all the animals that had it. So the people who make Chol V'Shalom, though, are machmir to consider these animals that they should be treifas. And they come there to the farm and they say, if we're making Chol V'Shalom, you have to take all those animals, put them on the side, put them someplace else. We only want milk from animals that didn't have the surgery.
How many years ago did they do this?
How did they do this? 100 years ago? I don't know. I don't know what happened 50 years ago. No, it's not my problem. I know what's happening now. Nowadays, in every farm, it's easy to tell. You can actually tell the animals by looking at them. If the surgery is in the past year or two, you can actually see the scar, an outside scar on the animal. But after a while, you don't see that anymore. But nowadays, in any modern farm, you can see, computerized records will tell you what is a trait. So what happened is that the people who give hashkacha on the Chol V'Shalom are machmir for this. And Mimela, anybody who gives hashkacha is also machmir. For example, the CRC gives hashkacha on Chol V'Shalom cheeses. Even though the CRC holds that this surgery doesn't make you a treifa, we certify all kinds of chol stam, things like that. When we make Chol V'Shalom, we're machmir for this. Because that's understood that in Chol V'Shalom you have to be machmir for this. That's how everybody does. So when you buy Chol V'Shalom milk or cheese or anything like that, you're getting milk that did from animals that didn't have the surgery. Now, there's reasons to be matter it. The surgery doesn't make it a treifa. That's accepted. Again, we give hashkacha today on things that are chol of stam, even though the animals had that surgery. We do it every day of the week. But when we make chol of Yisrael, we don't. But chol of Yisrael, we're standing there in the farm. We say, why on earth should we take from these animals? We take those animals, put them on the side, and take these animals that don't have the surgery, those people take the milk from there. Why do we need to have this chashash when we can avoid the shayla of treifas? So this is not a Chol V'Shalom issue. This is like a side benefit from having the Chol V'Shalom is that by having Chol V'Shalom, you don't have this shail of having the treifa. You're getting only from cows that don't have the treifa. Okay. Now a few little things. Again, like side benefits from eating the Chol V'Shalom. When the farmers milk the cows, the same farmers who milk cows are not the ones who bottle the milk or make cheese out of it. There's farmers who raise cows, and they collect milk. Every 8 hours, they milk the cows, and they have this big tank full of milk. That milk gets sent to somebody else, whose job it is, a different company, who makes bottled milk or cheese or whatever other things that they can make out of it. How does the milk get from the farmer to what we call the dairy, the place where they do things with the milk? It goes in the tanker truck. Now you've seen them on the highway. They have these trucks that go along. And in the milk industry, those trucks are pretty dedicated. They only use it for milk. That's how the culture is. They use it only for milk. That's true. They pretty much only use it for milk.
But they put the milk in
the truck itself.
No boxes, no.
No. It's just a big tank. You see some tanks that say Exxon that have oil inside of them, and there's another one that has milk inside of it. The actual milk. Right there, a big tank, thousands of gallons of milk. Now, those tanks are basically only used for milk. The ones that work in the dairy industry, that's just they go from back and forth from the farm to the dairy. How do they clean it out is a question. Now, usually they clean it out in a place that just does milk trucks. That's the most common way to do is to clean it out in a place that do just milk trucks. But not necessarily. They may clean it out in a place that does trucks that had trade products in them also. Potentially. And the water that they use to clean it can be reused from one truck to another. Okay? Now, they don't use dirty water. What they do is like this. When you wash the truck, you wash it a few times. There's a first rinse that just gets out the big pieces, flushes them out. That goes to the garbage. Then there's like a soap that comes in. And then at the end, when it's pretty clean, they do a last rinse at the end. Okay, there's you know, a few steps in the middle. Then there's like a last rinse at the end. That last rinse is pretty clean water. So from their perspective, that water is pretty clean. That water might be used in the next truck. That water, the last water of one truck, might be the first water of the next truck. Okay, the first water, which is just getting up big chunks of pieces, might be used, and it might be hot. So, you might take tray, it's like sort of washing your dishes together. They might take brioche out of a tray truck, and then wash your milk truck with it afterwards. Now, if they did that, it wouldn't be the end of the world. That's the truth. Because the milk's going to be cold. The milk usually doesn't sit for 24 hours. Anyhow, the milk would probably be okay. It probably would not make your milk tray if it went in a truck like this. Okay? But, and that's what everyone's been relying on. But not Chalav Yisrael. Chalav Yisrael would never put milk into a truck that was treif, or if they would, they would make sure it didn't sit in that truck for long enough to become treif. Okay. Similarly, when a dairy gets milk in, one of the things they have to do is to pasteurize it. Okay. Pasteurize is a very fancy way of heating up the milk to kill any bacteria and things that are growing there to make it safe for you. That heating, the pasteurizers are in a dairy is usually just for milk. Usually. But not always. There are other things that they might run in there also. They might run drinks in there that are not kosher, depending on the business, etc. So usually it's okay, and it shouldn't make much of a problem, and therefore it's accepted that it's kosher, even though it went through the pasteurizer. It might be bottled bleach, maybe the bleach is not big enough to make it tray, all kinds of things, okay. But anybody who's doing Chol Yisrael production would catch that pasteurizer. Before they started running the Chol Yisrael milk through it, they would be sure to catch it. Nobody would make Chol Yisrael without kashrut. Okay. Lastly, when you make, I mentioned to you that there's such a thing called Gvinas Yisrael. Gvinas Yisrael means that when you make cheese, a Jew has to be part of the making of the cheese in different ways. Almost all of the Paiskim say that applies to all cheeses. Okay? Meaning, cheese like American cheese, cheddar cheese, mozzarella, those are what we call hard cheeses. When you hold them, it's a hard cheese. And it applies to soft cheeses also, like cottage cheese and cream cheese and things like those kind of soft, what we call soft cheeses. Like, think about it, cottage cheese is not hard and firm. Even applies to soft cheese. Almost all the poskim in print say that. Okay? But almost none of the American hashgachas are machmir for that. Almost all the American hashgachas hold, from a psak from a penkin, that soft cheeses don't have to be Gvinas Yisrael. So that's why if you go into a Jewel, you'll see lots of brands of cottage cheese and cream cheese that are kosher. They're not Jewish brands, just the regular store brands would be kosher, because it's nothing special. It doesn't cost more to make it kosher. You'll never see Jewel brand American cheese that's kosher, because it costs much more to make kosher cheese. Because to make kosher hard cheese, a Mashiach's got to stand there the whole time. Okay, the Mashiach's got to be there the whole time, throwing in rennet every time they make a batch. So the only kosher cheese you'll ever see is a Jewish brand. But soft cheeses, everyone is making, like Rav Henkin said, that soft cheeses don't need to have a yidir. So a Mashiach visits every so often, but a Mashiach doesn't stand there all the time. So soft cheeses, the accepted psak is, soft cheeses do not need Gvinas Yisrael. Almost, and not every hashkafa, but almost, there's one standout, but almost all the hashkafas accepted that soft cheeses doesn't need Gvinas Yisrael. Okay? That's all true if you don't need Chol Yisrael. If you need Chol Yisrael, with a yid standing there during the cheesing for the Chol Yisrael Shabbat, they'll make it, almost every one of them will make it Gvinas Yisrael also. So even though in a Chol Stam, you could buy cottage cheese, you could buy your casein, all these kind of things are made not Gvinas Yisrael, because we're Shammah, or Henkin said that it's not. The Chol Yisraels will all have what almost all the Paiskim before Henkin say is that does need to have Gvinas Yisrael. And so again, that's like a side benefit. It has nothing to do with the Chol Yisrael of it, but it sits as a hashkacha there. And hashkacha wants to be more particular. They want to be on top of what's going on. They're going to be makbid for this thing, which in a Chol Stam production will never happen. Okay, so to summarize, and we'll take some questions then. To summarize is, we have two reasons why a person would be allowed to eat food that didn't have a yid watching the milking. Either because it's not, no chashash if you really mix something else in, therefore you don't have to have Chol Yisrael, or Moshe said, that it really is, so to speak, Chol Yisrael. You're sure enough that it's milk, you have a non-sahadi, and therefore you're allowed to eat it. So those are two reasons why people eat it. However, we've also seen, within those shitas, there are those who disagree, with it to those shitas themselves, and aside from that is, there are a lot of, so to speak, side benefits that a person gets from eating the Chol of Yisrael, that other shilas that come up, that the Chol of Stam have chosen to be make all those shilas, which is fine. We don't have to be machmir on everything. I'm not saying you should be machmir on everything. But by eating the Chol of Yisrael, you're avoiding and gaining these shilas that you don't have to say, I'm not being make on that thing because the Chol of Yisrael gives it to me. Okay, and we really come back to what Ramosha said. I'm going to end with this. What Ramosha said was that for people who need to, people who are stuck, people have special situations, then there's reasons to say that the food is mutter. And those people are fine and comfortable, they should eat what they eat. But for people who have it available, people who are able to get the Chol of Yisrael, and basically, I'm not saying every single type of first shabbat they can get, but they can get just about everything that they need. They live in a place where they can get those things, so it's a very appropriate thing that a person should be makbid to eat those Chol of Yisrael.
When you go into an establishment that doesn't have hashgacha on the whole store, right? You want to get yourself a hot chocolate.